Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Last Full Measure with your host, Ted Hayes and Eric Johnson.
Shalom, I'm Eric Johnson here with Ted Hayes to continue our discussion of that last full measure that Abraham Lincoln talks about in his Gettysburg Address on this, our 12th episode of The Last Full Measure. Thank you for tuning in. We really do appreciate all of you listening in. Ted, how are you, sir?
Baruch Hashem. That's the Hebrew word for thank God. Hashem being God, the name of God. Baruch is thank you. Baruch Hashem, I'm doing great. And once again, shalom, shalom in Jerusalem. They who pray for the peace of Jerusalem shall prosper. And God knows we need prosperity. So blessings to Jerusalem today. I'm doing great, Eric. How about yourself?
We're well. We are, it's summer, so the kids are home, and we're always doing stuff here around the house, and it's good. It's good.
Great.
It's good having them home, and everybody's well. Everybody's well. So
great. Let's ask the listeners how they doing. Hey, y'all, how y'all doing?
Oh, I heard one of them.
Gotcha.
I heard one of them's doing really well. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I did. It was really faith.
Yeah.
No, I heard him in my heart. They shouted it out. We're doing freaking great to be listening to Eric and Ted on The Last Full Measure. Rap on, boys. Rap on.
Folks, look, we really do appreciate all of you listening in, and our numbers are growing. It's like, wow, the message is getting out there, and it is resonating with people, which is exciting. Which brings me to a point of our show here. Ted, you were telling me today that today is a significant day in our calendar as far as an anniversary of something that happened today. What is that? Share that with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, 155 years ago today, in a little small town in Pennsylvania called Gettysburg, that was the place of what we now know as the Battle of Gettysburg, the battle that turned the tide of the Civil War into the favor of the Union for ending slavery. Because, as you know, Abraham Lincoln, the president, earlier that year on January the 1st, enacted the Emancipation Proclamation, I'm sorry, folks. I had to sneeze. I've been fighting some hay fever. Uh-oh. This is terrible. I'm sorry. And that he had already, on September 22nd, the president had issued a warning to all the southern states who had seceded from the Union that if they do not return back to the Union in good faith, that he would declare the slaves in their states free. And they didn't listen to his warning, so on January the 1st, it became an executive order that certain slaves in certain regions of the country were set free. But that set the country on that course of the war was about ending slavery. Well, on this particular day, a general by the name of Pickett, we know him from the famous Pickett Charge, he took 15,000 innocent young white boys, Confederate young white boys. The majority of them are poor white boys. Most of those poor white boys didn't even have shoes on their feet. And they were raggedy, and they were hungry. And he just had gotten back from a long march to Gettysburg. And Lee told Pickett to charge, and Pickett led them boys across that field, and they got wiped out. The Union soldiers just cut those boys down. And that was the end of the Battle of Gettysburg. Total thousands, tens of thousands of young, innocent white boys and men on both the North and the South were killing each other this day, would set this country in the direction that it's in right now. And the funny thing about this, folks, that there was a lot of dead bodies buried out there that had to be buried. And it was black people, freed slaves and runaway slaves and freedmen who went out there and did the vast majority of the burying of those innocent young white boys and men who died to really clarify what the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and what our country is really all about. It's a very solemn and serious day. Those boys did not own slaves. They didn't start this. It was not their fault. But yet, those boys paid. And I hear today people speaking of young white men as the white boys, the white men, the white boys, and making a derogatory term. Well, I see that term, white boy. Them white boys died because and for me. Them white men, they died because and for me. And you guys hopefully pray that this is God's will. If he gives me the national platform, one day I'm going to lead marches and vigils and demonstrations of love and appreciation to white people. And we're going to thank you, because as far as I can tell, since the day that we were set free from slavery, other than Memorial Day, when those black slaves in Charlottesville, South Carolina, started Memorial Day, other than that, whenever we black folks have marched or demonstrated, it's always been what the white man has or has not done for us. Never have we bothered to stop and say, hey, white man, hey, white boy, United States white man, white boy, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate you for what you've done, and we honor you. And we're going to abide by this country's laws, and we're going to do the right thing because of our honor and appreciation of you. That's what I hope to do one day, brothers and sisters.
Wow, I know that would be... It does. And I know there's a lot of white individuals that are terrified. They are terrified today because, as you were talking about, it was the white guilt complex. It's like, whoa. But hearing you, and I've known you for, what are we going on, almost 10 years?
At least somewhere
there. It's somewhere in there, yeah. Watching all this and seeing it go on, it's like, you know, I can definitely be proud of my heritage.
There you go.
What we have done is, wow, a whole nation went to war with itself to free the chattel slave.
Yeah, and these were, it just so happens that the nation, which was a nation of immigrants, was fighting with immigrants from Europe, which happened to be white Caucasian people, okay? They were fighting with each other over the chattel slaves who happened to be black Negroid people of Africa, who ironically, the reason that they became slaves in this country in the first place was just like the Europeans are always fighting with each other in Europe and fighting with each other in America, black people, the so-called Africans in Africa, was fighting with each other. Skin color had nothing to do with why this particular African of this particular tribe hated the other one. Just like skin color had nothing to do when the Italian hating the German or the German the British or whoever had the skin color. It had to do with ideals and perhaps ethnicity. And we put ourselves on those slave ships, folks. See, and so here you are, Caucasian, European immigrant, white people, fighting and killing each other. Some of your cousins and brothers in business together, fathers and sons, killing each other over some people from a whole nother continent who didn't even ask to be here, but they were brought here, and we're fighting and killing each other over these people. What a, in the name of the Declaration of Independence, we're going to figure this out. What an incredible thing that's never happened in the history of the world that I know of, Americans. Whether you're from the North or whether you're from the South, get your white chin up off of your white chest and get your white head up in the air and your white shoulders back. And you walk with some dignity. You walk like you love what them boys did out there, North and South. They were all patriots, all of them. And you owe it to them to cling to your heritage and to promulgate your heritage, because that's what's going to stop these foreigners from coming over here, legally or illegally, trying to tell you what is and is not American.
You know, I just had an interesting thought cross my mind. We chose, as a nation, to go to war for the chattel slave and to free them. What would have happened if we said, okay, we freed you, but we're sending you all back? How many of the populace would be born in Africa and not here?
You know,
do you see what I'm saying here?
If we, yeah,
if
we, yeah,
said,
yeah.
Okay,
I,
you're
I'm
free.
Guaranteed.
Now we're going to put you all back in chips and we're going to send you back to Africa.
Yeah. No.
But we didn't. We said, no, we're going to incorporate you. We're going to make you part of our family.
Yeah, that was actually tried. At one point, Abraham Lincoln was so frustrated with this whole situation that he said, that's why a lot of people say Abraham Lincoln was actually a racist. He really didn't care about black folks. He said, look, let's, you know, the two of us, the black and the white, are going to be in this country forever. One has to be superior, the other has to be inferior. I prefer, like anybody would, I prefer that the white be the superior as far as status goes in society. He said, let's ship them down to Mexico. Let's just have an armada of ships to go to Mexico, go and let them go there and start their life over. So the Mexican presidents and the government wired Mr. Lincoln, got in contact with him, said if you send them down, he'll kill every last one of them. So he couldn't do that. So Lincoln was forced into a corner where God had to deal with him in the ultimate run. But about 30 years before that, President James Monroe had put together, with taxpayers' money and some corporate investment, bought a ship and got some escaped slaves and freed slaves and supplied them resources, and he sent them to Africa to start a colony. And when they landed there in Africa, in an area that we now call Liberia, Liberty Land, they jumped off the boat, check this out, Eric, everybody, these black Americans, right? they jump off the boat, and when the people, the African peoples, saw them at the shore, we jump off, we home, y'all. The Americans say, who are you? Where do you come from? We don't know you. Well, we come to reclaim our land. This is not your land. This is the Bassaw land. This is the Pele land. It's not your land. And so they got into a big fight. And so the Americans jumped on the ship, and they went up to Morocco and used some American tax dollars and bought some guns and cannons and stuff. And they came back down there, and they opened up on the Pele and the Bassaw. And them American blacks beat those African blacks all the way back into the jungle and took over the country and built a city called Monrovia. That is the capital of Liberia. And all the presidents of Monrovia, of Liberia, from that time forward have been Americans, because the Americans refused to allow the native people to participate equally and republicanly and democratically in the government, which is what caused that revolution where the American leaders got their butts killed over there in the 1970s. And finally, they didn't got Liberia halfway back on his feet. Ain't that something?
Wow,
most people don't
history.
Know that.
I never even heard it. I did not know that. That is, wow.
No. But see, so the idea is, but Eric, you know what though, Eric? You know what though, everybody? I can almost guarantee you, if that offer was given to people to go back to Africa, even legitimately, they wouldn't take it. I would say 99% of the descendants of chattel slave, black U.S. citizens in America, including those involved with Black Lives Matter and talking about the racist Nazi white man or white boy, you offer them a free trip to any country in Africa that they want to go into. You'll buy them a meal for the airplane ride, but you're not going to give them no cash, because when they get there, they're going to be received with the red carpet treatment, and they'll be given housing and jobs. They won't go. They will not go. I know of Africans, African-Americans so-called, went down to South Africa. They say they'll never go back again. I've had many different black people say they'll never go back to Africa again. So you see,
they don't, cause they get out of this country and they realize just how good this country really is.
Hey, the homeless in America got it made compared to most people around the world. You know? And so this is why, you know, God willing, I'm trying to bring a new attitude in our country, an attitude of patriotism, an attitude of being conciliatory towards one another, an attitude, if we're going to make a criticism, let's offer a solution. You know, that, because them boys, and here we sit, Everybody this weekend, they're getting drunk, they're partying, they're, oh, happy 4th of July. In fact, tomorrow, my alter ego, Mr. Patriot, is going to be in two 4th of July parades tomorrow, one in Santa Monica, and the other will be up in Pacific Palisades in the afternoon. By the way, Eric, guess what, everybody? Mr. Patriot made the front pages of the Santa Monica newspaper. Big old picture, Mr. Patriot, sitting up there. It's that something's happening in Santa Monica. The People's Republic of Santa Monica, I think, is getting some patriotism. So you know,
we'll be doing that tomorrow.
I'm sorry?
There's a report that came out today or yesterday.
Uh-huh.
That says that the more people that celebrate the 4th of July,
uh-huh,
the more people that go to 4th of July parades,
uh-huh,
are more likely to vote Republican.
Yes, I've heard that before. I have heard that before. And you should see, this would be my third year. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Please.
They're telling Democrats, don't bother going. Don't bother going to the parades. Don't bother waving the flag, because you're not going to win anybody. Because they always go Republican. And it's like, what's wrong with letting America be America?
It's that socialist
disease. Why do we
disease.
Have to change it? We need to get rid of that cancer.
Yeah, that's what it is, my brother. It's a deadly cancer that's been festering in our country since the 1850s. And we have not properly dealt with it because we never really used our Constitution the way we should use it. But, yeah, so, Eric, you know, tomorrow Mr. Patriot goes out there, you know, in the morning and then in the afternoon. And it's all festive and wonderful, but we tend to forget about those boys today and the day before. And, you know, folks, I hope somebody picks this up. We need to build a monument of Confederate and Southern boys together. You know, and we really need to make something about this because that's the heart of our country. And clearly we have not healed because look at all the racial stuff that keeps popping up. And not even really racial issues. What's the word I want to use, Eric? They're ginned up racial issues. They're not even racial issues. But that just goes to show you that the wound has not yet been closed. It's not yet been healed. You know, if you got a wound and someone just gingerly touches you, the wound is not healed. And we need to heal
wound. It's like we've got people that are purposely keeping the wound open.
It's a business. It's a business, as we say in the hood. It's a business. They're making big bucks. And that's why, folks, years ago, go look it up, the 2008 apology resolution where some white congressional people, primarily Democrats, wrote a resolution hoping that it would go law that acknowledged slavery, Jim Crowism, the damage it has done for generations to come, apologized for it, and offered reconciliation, and the African-American leaders chose to keep it quiet because they knew that after black and white people finish hugging each other and realizing, wow, you know, we can forgive and confess, and we all looked into the African-American leaders breathless. Okay, Jesse, Allen, Congressional Black Caucus, what y'all want us to do? And they don't have a clue. And so they'd rather keep the fecal matter flying everywhere than actually fixing things and make it happen because they make money off of fertilizer.
Yeah, they do. And it's a shame.
And it's going to be exposed. It's going to be exposed really soon here. Eric, before we get out of here.
Oh, yeah, we got time. What do you got?
Can I read the Gettysburg Address while we're talking about this?
Yes. By all means, go.
Folks, this is dedicated to all those brave men who perished in the Civil War and at Gettysburg. Black and white, 30,000 blacks died too in that conflict, and all the millions of men who were wounded physically and mentally for life, and all the families that had to suffer loss from that war. Abraham Lincoln went to Gettysburg to dedicate Gettysburg as a cemetery, and he gave the Gettysburg Address, which goes like this. 47 years ago, our fathers, that's 70 years, brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we do this, but in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Wow. Every time I hear it, every time you say it, everybody, it just, I can understand why the people that were actually there listening to this did not applaud at the end, because they were so moved by what he said. Because if you remember, nobody said anything. They were, he sat down or he left, and people went up to him afterwards, and he just didn't want to hear it because he thought he did a horrible job.
Hey, Eric, I've heard one story. Because, of course, he had his fit sense of humor, right? And plus, he wasn't feeling good because he's fighting the cold, right? So, poor guy. But as you said, there was no applause. And no, yeah! He steps off the platform, and somebody heard him mutter under his breath, "That went over like a lead brick."
Oh.
That poor man. That went over just wonderful, Abe.
Wow.
He didn't know what he had, did he? I think he knew what he had in his heart. I really think it. I just think that probably, like you said, it was just, we'd never heard such words before. And with such conviction. He was very clear. This country is all about, America. This is America great. This is America great again.
Yeah, I think everybody, we have to constantly be reminded of it. Because we're listening to the media. Now, what a lot of people don't know is I've unplugged. I don't have cable. So I don't listen to, MSNBC or CNN. I don't.
Good for
you. I don't
need
to. Because I know that, 90% of it is all garbage anyways.
It is. Socialist garbage.
Socialist
propaganda.
Why? But I think I unplugged about a year and a half ago, and I have to tell you, I'm not as stressed as I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think after the first week or two, it's like, wow, I'm all more relaxed.
Yeah.
There are people that I listen to on the radio, and there are places I go to get news if I want to see what's going on, but half the stuff, I just look at the title or the subject line and go, well, that's vague. Because you just know.
Yeah.
I encourage people, unplug. I mean, if you want something, go to the internet.
I listen in for a few minutes, just to watch them squirm, and then I get away from it, because it's like smelling vomit. You know, you just don't want to be around it, you know.
You reminded me, I was on YouTube watching, just kind of perusing stuff on YouTube, and there was one that was about Donald Trump on pre-election and post-election, how the media was saying he'll never make it, and it was just amazing to see he'll never make it to, oh, he's president, our world's changed, this is their life, you know, you could tell the panic in their eyes.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I unplugged, I don't need any of that.
Yeah,
don't
yeah, no, you're right, that's... I think they're falling apart. Mr. Trump has turned out to be nothing that they predicted him to be. In fact, he
yeah.
is shining like a star. And I think these poor people, they feel jealous inside. They feel like that should have been their crowning glory. Why should it go to the rich class clown playboy? The guy who is sexually immoral and perverse, the guy who's had three marriages, the guy who's probably had been with more women than perhaps Solomon and King David combined. Who knows? So why should he be the most powerful
Solomon
man in the
world? Like, what, 800? I don't
know.
Oh, I think Solomon had like 800 wives.
I don't know how he got through it. But he had mandrake. They had mandrake in those days. They used to take that, and apparently that mandrake gave them the rip roaring of a bull in heat or something, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
So it was Viagra on steroids.
Yeah, it was that mandrake. Apparently, you can still get that. You have to go find. But the point I'm making is that people look at Mr. Trump as, you know, one of the good old boys. Why does he get to be president and not me? And I think that's what a lot of the hysteria is. And I think the women. A lot of the women just, and rightly so, I understand them being upset with some of that stuff, but the Democrats, they do even worse. They do even worse. You know, but just because the person, and I don't blame them, because it's the Republicans' fault. It's the Republicans' fault that the country is messed up and that the Democrats are creating chaos, because the Republicans, who are supposed to be the guardians of the Republic, on not doing that, and I would challenge anybody to take me up on this. Let's spread the word. I believe that 90.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right. They sat down.
Yeah, they sat down. They did because either they don't know what it means to be Republican. I think 99% of people say that the Republicans don't know what it means, or they're afraid to be Republicans, because if they become Republicans, that means black people, who are really screwed up in everything that we're doing, will want to be Republicans, and Republicans feel they can't fix black people, because the last time they tried to fix black people was during the Reconstruction, post the Civil War, and they couldn't get black people to cooperate with each other, because black people didn't like each other. So Republicans figure, you know what? We're tired of this. We spilled a lot of blood, a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy. We can't fix these people, so we better focus our energy elsewhere. And that's what happened to us, and that's why the Democrats took us back under their jurisdiction. But see, Republicans, we black folks, we haven't faced ourselves yet. You know, that's the whole problem. You know, there's nothing really that, and God bless white people for doing what you're doing. Everybody else is trying to help black folks out. We really love you for that, appreciate you. But until we black folks realize that we are the ones who put ourselves on those slave ships, that we were at war with each other as we remain at war with each other to this day, until we come to grips with that and confess our faults one towards another and pray for one another, we're not going to be healed. We're not going to be healed. And that's my crusade. I'm really trying to you know, yeah, the Democrats got some bad stuff over there, but and Republicans
well,
not
yeah.
doing their job, but what about us?
Well, folks, we're at the end of our show already, again. I want to thank all of you for joining us, and we'll see you all next week. So, shalom in Jerusalem.
Shalom in Jerusalem.
Well, that concludes tonight's broadcast of The Last Full Measure. Make sure you tune back in next Tuesday night to hear the latest from Eric and Ted as they discuss the issues that face a divided America.